Good morning. You can, if you have a Bible with you, go and open to Psalms. Actually, I take that back. Well, you can open the Psalms if you want to. Psalms 25, verse 4. However, we're really going to be in Proverbs today. All right, so Psalms and then Proverbs. And so Psalms 25, 4, sort of the key verse for today, but we are going to spend a fair amount of time in Proverbs, kind of verses 1 through 3. One of my prized possessions growing up, I was just got my driver's license, and I went to Walmart, and I bought a Rand McNally Road Atlas. I loved the Rand McNally Road Atlas. I loved being the navigator. I liked being next to the driver, telling him where to go, telling him where to turn. Maybe I just like bossing him around. I don't know. I remember being 14, going to Florida. And my grandfather actually let me sit in the passenger seat of his motorhome, and I navigated us all the way down to Florida. And so I love my maps. I love sort of had a good sense of direction, figuring out where to go. And then, like, I'd look at the mile markers, and then you look at the exit numbers on the map, and like, okay, we'll be to that exit in 8 minutes and 32 seconds, you know. And that was kind of me. And so I loved the map, my Rand McNally Road Atlas. It wore out, and I got another one, all right. And so the thing is, I don't have one anymore. Because of GPS. And I was a bit bitter when GPS came out and you could put these Garmins in your car because, like, I felt like my skill set was becoming obsolete. And so I was just a bit jealous. And so, like, I remember being a passenger and then they wouldn't need my help anymore because you'd have your little device in your car. Now we have our phones. And it would just, it was cool though when it first came out because you actually see where you're at on the map. And it tells you where to go, turn right and turn left. Now, the thing is, just having that GPS, you still need to be able to sort of figure things out and to use your mind, all right? And so, for example, there's a sitcom. It's not on anymore, but there's a sitcom where there's a guy, and he works in an office. And he, I think he has a rental car, and he's going on a sales call. He sells paper. And so he's going on a sales call, and he's following his GPS, and it says, go this way, go that way, and then it says, turn right. Well, that's what the GPS said to do. So he turns right, and lo and behold, he just drives right into a pond because he was just following the GPS. If you don't plug in the right address on your GPS, you might end up at Crossroads and Polo if you're not paying attention. And so I know I've had friends visit, and they'll just type in, you know, Crossroads Community Church, Illinois, and it's in this area, and they'll start driving out to Polo, not realizing that they got the wrong address, the wrong location. Also, again, you still have to be able to figure out what route to take. When I was I was headed up to Wisconsin, and this is before I was in Rochelle, so I'd only been to Rockford maybe once. There's a group from Central Illinois. We were going up to Wisconsin. And if memory serves me, I didn't realize it at the time, but it was Rockford, and I was the navigator, but I didn't need to be the navigator anymore because there's GPS, and we were going up, and they had programmed into the GPS to take the most direct route. And so if you just listen to the GPS, you may actually not go on the road you want to go on, because instead of kind of going around Rockford, I'm pretty sure in retrospect, we got off the interstate and we went up Alpine. Stop sign, stop sign, stop light, stop sign, stop light. And we could have just zoomed right around it. Okay, it wasn't the best route to take. And so we still need to figure out, you know, and even sometimes now with a map, it gives you options. And you got to think through, you know, construction, speed. Maybe you are someone who likes to go fast. And so even if it's going to take longer to go out, you still want to go that way just because you want to drive fast. So many options, so many routes. And so while this talk of roads, while this talk of GPSs, because a route, a road, a path, a trail, it is the ultimate metaphor for life. It's the ultimate metaphor for life. If you've been to a graduation ceremony, Robert Frost's famous poem, The Road Not Taken, it's all about the journey of life and the options we take in terms of what path we want to take with our life, what road we want to go on. And it's cool that even almost 3,000 years ago, this is a metaphor used for life. They don't have roads in the way we do, but they have paths. And so in Psalms chapter 25, verse 4, Psalms 25, verse 4, David is speaking, King David. And King David, again, King Solomon, using a metaphor for life. David writes, "Make me to know your ways, O Lord. Teach me your paths." Right? Make me to know your ways. Teach me your paths. Now, a path in ancient times, if you're going on a journey, is different than it is today, all right? So if I'm going to hop on the interstate and go to southern Illinois, I don't have a lot of options. I'm going to hit 251 and fly down there and be down 5 or 6 hours. And so I'm going to get on the interstate. And what am I concerned about? I'm concerned about losing my radio signal if I'm listening to a radio station. I'm concerned about, where am I going to stop at for lunch? And worst case scenario, if my car breaks down today, you got your cell phone, all right? And so there's not a lot of danger associated with picking the right road to go on. I mean, there's pretty much one road, and it's going to go south. In ancient times, the path was a little bit more significant. If you're going to go on a journey from point A to point B, you got to plan some things out. What are you going to drink along the way? What are you going to eat? Where are you going to stop at along the way? You can't just, get your phone out and, here's the motels in this town. And so you got to figure out what path you want to take. Also in terms of, if you're going from point A to point B, do you want to take the longer route, which is safer? Or do you want to take the short route, but you know what? The terrain is rugged. And you might slip and you might fall. There's danger along the route. Also, there's robbers along the route, certain paths. Some might be dangerous in the fact that you might die. There's thieves and robbers and all sorts of things in terms of figuring out the safe path to get to point A to point B and not be hurt. And so here David is saying, God, show me the right path to take. All right, I don't want to end up in the hands of thieves. I don't want to fall on the slippery train. Show me the right path. Teach me your ways. I want to walk in my life the way you want me to walk. And it's not just the big picture decisions we make in life, all right, jobs, careers, spouse, all these things, retirement. It's the little decisions too. It's the daily walk, step by step by step. What does our life look every single day? Because those baby steps along the path, it ultimately does lead you where you're going with it without us even realizing it. And so here's David with all this life experience he has, and he's still searching. He's asking God, show me the right path. And so first of all, two things. We got to talk about the path that we want to avoid, all right? The path that we want to avoid, the path that is going to lead, unfortunately, to destruction, all right? So in Proverbs chapter 2, the focus is verse 12 through 15, but I'm going to actually start with verse 9 just to give it some context. And so this is a father instructing his son on what path to take and what paths to avoid. It says, Proverbs chapter 2, starting at verse 9, "Then you will understand righteousness and justice and equity, every good path. For wisdom will come into your heart, and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. Discretion will watch over you, understanding will guard you, delivering you from the evil way." So here's the key. What is that evil way? "From men of perverted speech, who forsake the paths of uprightness, to walk in the ways of darkness, who rejoice in doing evil and delight in the perverseness of evil, men whose paths are crooked and who are devious in their ways." And so it's describing someone there who's on a path, and it's a crooked path. And what's the description there? It talks about walking in darkness, perverted speech, intentionally devious, enjoying evil. And so I ask myself, what kind of person is that? And so when I look at that description, we think of people who are like the bad sort, all right? Criminals, you know? And I was thinking about I was talking about sort of deviousness and everything. I thought about making a joke and saying something about presidential candidates, but I decided not to, all right? And so, I wasn't going to actually make that joke, but... just this idea of people who are intentionally evil, intentionally out to hurt you. And so some of you say, well, in my life, that's been present or is present. And some of you might say, well, that's not me. Like that sounds bad. Like I'm not actually a part of that group. I mean, I'm not intentionally devious. I don't think I'm walking in darkness and in evil with perverted speech and so forth. But the problem with us not including ourselves in that group of people on this crooked path, at minimum, The problem is that Jesus lays out an ethic in the New Testament that none of us can keep, all right? And so every time this comes up, the first text that always comes to mind is Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount. And in Matthew, he says, oh, you think goodly, highly of yourself because you're not a murderer? Well, do you hate your brother? Do you ever get angry? Because if you do, you're a murderer. That's what Jesus says. You don't actually have to kill someone. Just with your heart, to have hatred and anger, you're a murderer. Later on, he says, oh, you haven't cheated on your spouse. Well, have you looked at another person? Have you lusted and desired after another person? Because if you have, you've cheated on your spouse. You are guilty of adultery. And so this idea that sin just doesn't flow, it's not a product of our actions, but it flows out of the heart. And so the idea is, well, maybe you're not a thief. Well, maybe we just steal with our heart. Maybe we're not cheating on our spouse, but, you know, a smile to someone who doesn't deserve it. Maybe you haven't killed anyone. You haven't done a murder, but there's certainly hatred at times and anger. And so there's just a list I've made of, and it's in Scripture, of things that are in our hearts that ultimately, that they don't sort of always manifest themselves in this huge evil, but man, it's there. There's this seed of greed and materialism, desiring for more wealth and more things to create happiness, lust, to be envious and jealous, to have anger and bitterness, to gossip, to be negative, to be impatient, to be harsh and arrogant, to have conversations and joking that tears other people down. That's just harsh and crude. All of these things, unfortunately, put us on a path of darkness. Those things are not from God. And if there's any trace of those in our lives, like I said, there is darkness. Why can't we just avoid those things? Why can't we just stay on the path we're supposed to stay on all the time? Well, there's an allure. There is an allure to those things. And in Proverbs chapter 1, starting at verse 10. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 10. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait for blood. Let us ambush the innocent without reason. Like Sheol, let us swallow them alive and whole. Like those who go down to the pit, we shall find all precious goods. We shall fill our houses with plunder. Throw in your lot among us. We will all have one purse. And so with this greed, there's this promise of plunder and wealth and prosperity, and they're just going to share it all, one big purse. But the thing is, if greed is leading them to do that, well, we always know what happens in the movies and in books. The evil guys, they always betray each other. Once they steal from the good, there's that greed still. They want more and more and more, and it's never enough. And that's the problem with greed and materialism and wanting more things and pleasure with our wealth, is that it's never enough. And the thing is, you all know this. You all know this. It's here's right now my standard of living. Here's how much I make. Here's how much I own. Here's my possessions. But you know what? If I could just not even a lot. I'm not even asking to win the lottery, God. I just want a little bit more. Just have a little bit more. I'm going to be more comfortable. So you get a little bit more. Well, guess what? You know the story. But then when you get a little bit more, well, you have a whole new world of possibilities open to you where you want a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. And if you're not content with a little, you're not going to be content with a lot. You will always want more. But that's the allure of it. Like this idea that somehow we can get enough when it comes to greed. And it's not just money, it's anything where we think we're going to get enough and be satisfied. It just doesn't work that way. Something else, one of these, this crooked path that is alluring, impatience, to be impatient. The promise is if we're impatient, we're going to get something quicker. But being impatient rarely actually gets us that thing quicker. All right, so if after service today you're in the car and you're waiting and you're getting impatient, your impatience isn't going to make the person get to the car any quicker. Like, it doesn't do anything. Like, when I'm sitting out in the car waiting, that impatientness I feel, that impatience, it doesn't get what I want quicker. And vice versa, if I'm hurrying and someone is impatient, I can't make myself necessarily go any faster if I'm hurrying. Impatience doesn't actually get us what we want. We still have to wait. We still have to wait. And another, one last one, just an allure. It's anger and bitterness. I got to confess that sometimes when I'm angry, I just want to be angry. I always joke about with people when they talk about what superhero you'd want to be as sort of the Marvel comic universe. I always tell people, I'd want to be the Hulk. There's just something attractive to me about when you're angry, just being angry. And I don't want to feel better right now. I just want to be angry. And I know at times, and I know some of you know what I'm talking about. Like you're angry, and I know that if I just go to God, spend some time in prayer, spend some time in the Word, my heart is always calm. He always calms. But sometimes I don't want to. Sometimes I want to be angry because I feel like if I'm just angry enough and I just bathe myself in that anger and then it kind of goes away. And then I feel better now. Like as if somehow the anger is going to be bring the relief. But the thing is, when that's the source of the comfort, guess what? It comes back next week and the week after and the week after and a month later and a year later, and it's a drug. And it never actually provides that relief that we want. It promises to, but it doesn't. And why is all this sin, why is all this these things on the crooked path evil and alluring? Well then, but also, yeah, why is it so dangerous? Why is it so dangerous? In Proverbs chapter 1, my son, do not walk in the way with them. Hold back your foot from their paths. For their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. For in vain is a net spread in the sight of any bird. But these men lie in wait for their own blood. They set an ambush for their own lives. And so are you tracking with that? And so it's this idea that you're a robber, that you're a thief, you're on the path and you're waiting for some innocent bystander to come along and you're going to attack them, you're going to kill them, you're going to take all their wealth. Well, the reality is the only person you're attacking is yourself, all right? So the danger with walking on the crooked path, we are hurting ourselves. But not only that, in Proverbs chapter 2, if we just start at verse 16, the context is with this is adultery. It says, so you will be delivered from the forbidden woman, from the adulteress with her smooth words, who forsakes the companion of her youth and forgets the covenant of her God. For her house sinks down to death and her paths to the departed. Now here's the key verse. None who go to her come back, nor do they regain the paths of life. And so this idea that when we start walking on a crooked path and we're embracing that with our life, guess what? We are stuck. When we start down a dark path, we cannot get off of our own effort. It's the crooked path is a trap, and we're bound to it. We can't get off outside the grace of God. Outside God working in our lives, when we choose to sort of to embrace some of this evil in our hearts, we can't get off the path. We're trapped. And then last but not least, while sometimes the crooked path seems good, and there's an allure to it, and it seems prosperous, it ultimately leads to destruction. One of the Psalms I enjoy is Psalm 73, and the author of Psalm 73, he sees the prosperity of the arrogant. He sees people going about life the wrong way, and they're prosperous, and they're wealthy, and they have good health, and they have friends, and everything about their life seems perfect, but yet they're walking on a crooked path. And so he then himself is struggling with this. He sees people walking on a crooked path. Their life seems perfect. He says, like, well, maybe I should join in. And then text says, and still he walks into the sanctuary of the Lord, and he sees their end. And so ultimately, the path of crookedness leads to destruction and death. In verse 18 and 19 of Psalm 73, Surely you place them on slippery ground. You cast them down to ruin. How suddenly are they destroyed, completely swept away by terrors. This must have been a scary moment because I remember it. I was probably 3 or 4 years old. My family was hiking on a trail. And at the time when I was 3 or 4, it seemed like we were up really high. I don't know if we were very high or not. I mean, we could have been from here to the ground. I don't know. But I remember in the path, there was sort of a ledge next to us and then a drop on the other side. And so, and in the middle of the path, like some sort of branch or tree had fallen down that was in the path. And so I remember my mom kind of sort of like walking over it, sort of crawling over it because you had to go over it. Well, so here's the sort of the tree. On the edge of the ledge, there's some ground there, but it's sort of a little bit of an angle, all right? So my dad, he's carrying me, he's picking me up, and I'm expecting him to kind of go over this branch. Well, he just kind of walks on sort of this ledge area, and I remember his feet slipping, like, and then he gets back up on the path. And it's crazy that I'm 3 years old. I must have been terrified because this image just was ingrained into my mind. And ever since then, every once in a while, I have this reoccurring nightmare. And it's just awful. It's this idea. And if you've ever been on trails, you've ever climbed, like you've been on sort of a slope before. And you're on it and you're trying to get up. But like every time you move your foot or your hand, you kind of slip down a little bit. As long as you're not moving, you're okay. But as soon as you try to move to get up, you kind of slip and you go down farther and farther and farther. And this is sort of this anxious, reoccurring nightmare I have. And so, and even like I've had this dream multiple times where I just got to get to the top of a hill. And it doesn't look too steep. I mean, it's kind of steep. You know, it's not too bad. And so I start kind of walking up, and pretty soon I'm start climbing. But then it seems like in the dream, the hill just gets steeper and steeper and steeper. And I'm like trapped on this hill. And it's just right here, but like, what was here almost seems like it's vertical, and you just can't move, and you're slipping down, and there's a cliff, and you're going to fall, and you're going to die, and there's this anxiety. And that's the imagery we have here. We have a slippery slope where people are going to fall and die, and that's what this crooked path is. That's what this crooked path is. It looks sturdy, and it looks smooth, and it looks prosperous, but ultimately it leads to death. And so a couple points of application here regarding this crooked path. To stick with this metaphor of being on a slippery slope. If you're here this morning and you've never put your faith and trust in Jesus Christ, okay? Ultimately, as human beings, we're going to die because of our sin. And the metaphor is, in life, here's life, and here's sort of the gospel. This is what this Christianity thing is all about. Imagine walking with God, and God says, hey, there's a slippery slope right there that leads to a big drop, and if you get on that slippery slope, you're going to die. God just says you're going to die if you get on the slope. And so what do? We get on the slippery slope. God tells us, don't get on the slippery slope, but for whatever reason, we just, it looks appealing, there's an allure to it, and we get on the slope, and guess what? We get out there and like, oh no, I can't get up, I can't rescue myself, I'm going to die, I'm slipping, I'm going to fall. And that's what happens when we get on a crooked path. That's when there's sin and depravity in our lives. We're separated from God. We've rebelled. We're on a slippery slope. We're going to die. And after God's warned us, we say, God, help. Now, if I was God and you and I were God, we'd be like, well, I told you to stay off that slope. But what does God do? God sees our trouble. He sees that we're going to die. We can't get off the slope. We're going to fall. And God says, tell you what, I will send my son down there to help you get off the slope. And so God's son goes down there. He helps us off the slope. But then guess what? The son is still there on the slope. And we're out, we're rescued. And then Jesus, the son, falls to his death. And you say, Isn't that amazing that the God sacrifices his son for these rebels who, he warned us. He warned us not to get on the slope. He said, you're going to fall and die. He sends his son down to rescue us. We're safe. We're off the slope. And Jesus falls to his death in our place. And that's the gospel, that Jesus sacrificed himself for us. He dies in our place. He takes the punishment for our sin. Now, if you're here this morning and you've trusted in Christ to save you from your sin, to get you off that slope, you called out to God, why then do we sometimes keep playing on the slope? Like, we've been rescued from the slope. Jesus died in our place. Now, God says, hey, remember that slope? It wasn't good. But for some reason, we still want to go play on it. And so why is it, as Christians, why would we waste our lives for a second walking on a crooked path? For Jesus has died for us. I love Romans chapter 6. Where Paul is writing, if you're a believer, don't waste your life in sin. You've been rescued. You've been rescued. So if you're a Christian this morning, you've put your faith in Christ, and you say, hey, you know, there's some crookedness in my life this morning, just confess it. That's the thing, is God still forgives. And we confess, and he gets us back on track, the track we're supposed to. I think sometimes what happens is we get on that slope again, and then we're just kind of embarrassed. Like, God's already rescued us. What more do we expect him to do? And we just kind of get embarrassed. But we can never find ourselves in trouble, and God's not going to rescue us every time. And so let's stay off the crooked path, all right? And let's ask God for help. And so how do we get on the path we're supposed to be on? How do we go about finding it, recognizing it, walking on the right path? Well, number one, we ask God to show us the right path, all right? In Psalms 25, verse 4, teach me your ways, show me your path, show me how I'm supposed to walk. Now, if I pray that prayer, how do I know? And maybe it'll be just this flash moment of divine revelation. Oh, that's what path I'm supposed to take. And sometimes it may work that way. But sometimes what God does is he gives us wisdom in order to be able to understand the path. And so God provides wisdom. In Proverbs chapter 2, verse 6, it says, for the Lord gives wisdom. Well, it still kind of begs the question then, if I'm going to walk on God's path and he's going to give me wisdom to do it, like, how do I go about getting that wisdom? Well, James, in the book of James in the New Testament, it says, ask for it, all right? Ask God for wisdom. And to a certain extent, I think, you know, I don't know exactly how we get that wisdom. I always like the sci-fi movies where technology is more advanced than ours. And so, like, I remember watching a movie where this woman, she wants to fly a helicopter. Well, she doesn't want to fly a helicopter. So, like, they're able to, like, download the information into her mind in like 10 seconds and she can fly a helicopter. How cool would that be, not to have to like spend time learning, to not to have to spend time gaining knowledge, that God would just sort of download into our mind wisdom, that he would just download it. But the thing is, it may work like that at times, but I don't think that's the primary means by which God functions. How do we go about getting wisdom? Just later on in that verse, it says, from his mouth come knowledge and understanding. Just like in real life, you can't download into my mind how to do judo. Like, it takes time, it takes effort, it takes gaining knowledge, it takes study, it takes training, all of that. From his word, we gain knowledge and understanding, which give us wisdom. Guys, there's no shortcuts. Sometimes we want to know God's path and we want godly wisdom and all that, but we haven't spent any time in the Word, right? How do we expect to know God's path and to have wisdom in our lives when we don't have any knowledge and understanding that comes from this? And it's not just a matter of, oh, I got a problem, so I'm going to pick my Bible off the shelf that's been sitting there for the last 3 weeks or 4 or 3 months and hasn't been read, sort of dust off. Well, I have a problem. Let me go and find sort of in scripture where it talks about that. Like, I'm looking for some wisdom, all right? You can do that, but a much better way is just to gain the knowledge and understanding that comes from spending time day after day after day after day after day. So when we take that out of the equation, we take the word out of the equation, guess what? We're not going to have wisdom. We're not going to know what path to walk. And we're going to get on the crooked one all the time. Anyone been watching the Olympics this past week? I know there's been a few people out there. I have to throw that out there. I really enjoy the Olympics. And some of the sports you watch, you say to yourself, I could never do that. And so any kind of gymnastics, when we watch that, I think for a lot of us, we say that's never going to happen. But you know what? When I watch the swimming, I'm like, you know what? I know how to swim. Like, couldn't I do that with just a little more training? A couple weeks, get me in the water, right? But the thing is, even the people going to the Olympics, 6 months of training is not enough if you want to win a gold medal. Like, it's week after week, month after month, year after year of training. It's a process that takes time. And so, just like these Olympic athletes, they decided a long time ago that they wanted to win a gold medal, and they've been working towards it. If we want to be on God's path, if we want wisdom, we got to work towards it, and there's no shortcuts. It's spending time in His Word. And then we gain wisdom, when we gain knowledge, we gain understanding, when we know what choices to make in life. But the question is, do we really want to walk God's path? Because if we don't want to walk God's path, we're probably not going to really be in the Word. And so, do we want to actually walk God's path? Proverbs chapter 2, verse 1 through 5. My son, if you receive my words and treasure up my commandments with you, making your ear attentive to wisdom and inclining your heart to understanding, yes, if you call out for insight, if you raise your voice for understanding, if you seek it like silver, and in our case, talking about the Olympics, if you seek it like gold and search for it as hidden treasures, then you'll understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. And so, in the Olympics this year, one of the arguably the most famous athlete, Olympic athlete in the U.S. is Michael Phelps, all right? He's the Olympic swimmer. I think it's like 23 gold medals now. And so, I think he has 27 medals altogether, something like that. So when he's in a race, he wins it most of the time. And so, 2004, gold medals. 2008, a lot of gold medals. And then he says in 2012, so he was in the Olympics, but he kind of said, in interviews, his heart wasn't really in it. He didn't put forth the type of effort and training that he needed to. And I can kind of understand. I mean, the guy had been swimming for a long time. He's probably tired. He's probably tired of swimming, you know. And so he just said, you know, he didn't put a lot of effort into it. Now, with Michael Phelps not putting a lot of effort in, I think he still won like 5 gold medals. But he lost a couple races that really he should have won had he put in the training. But he says, you know, I just didn't put in the training I needed to. And so even this, heading into this Olympics, he said, you know what, I want to finish well. And so he put in all that training to be able to finish the way he wanted to and not sort of half-heartedly. And so I think about that. And even just like the attitude going into the Olympics in terms of, the amount of time these athletes put into their skill, into their craft, blow my mind. But you know what? They want to win a gold medal. Like they want to win, at minimum, get on the podium, you know. And so the question is, in our Christian lives, do we want to walk God's path? Like, are we just happy to be there, or do we want to win gold? As Christians, do we want to win gold, or are we just kind of happy to be there? If you're just happy to be there, you're probably not going to win anything. You're probably not going to spend any time in the Word. As Christians, we should want to win gold in our lives. In our lives, spending time in the Word, gaining wisdom, walking God's path. When we're walking on God's path, at some point in your life, you're going to have the opportunity to share the gospel with someone. You're going to have the opportunity to pray for someone, to share the gospel, to share Jesus, communicate that truth. There is no prize in this life. All the things we spend time on in this life, there is no prize that's going to compare when we're in eternity and someone comes up and says, you know what, thanks for praying for me. Thank you for sharing the gospel with me. Isn't that an amazing prize? The idea that God is going to use our lives to reach other people. Also, just the prize of Jesus himself and seeing him face to face. But with that, Jesus did all the work for that. We didn't really do much. We just cried out for help to God, and he rescued us. In closing, I just want to say a couple things about walking this path. As a pastor, I think one of the reasons I became a pastor and pastors become pastors is we look at people and we want everyone to be on the path. Like we desperately want everyone to be in the Word and studying and growing closer to God and involved in ministry, not just for the sake of like the church, but for your own benefit. I mean, we want to see people growing. There's nothing better than that, like seeing Christians maturing and growing in their faith. One of the highlights of even my time here at Crossroads, I remember one, as much as I love Nerf Wars, and I do love Nerf Wars, all right? As much as I joke around about all that, I remember the highlight, there's been a lot, but one of the highlights of student ministries, I remember there was a couple of weeks we were kind of talking about the gospel and kind of unpacking exactly who Jesus is and what he's done. And then a couple weeks later, there was a sort of someone at a student ministry that night who hadn't really come a lot, and she had some questions about putting her faith in Christ. She wasn't 100% sure on everything. And one of the other students chimed in and spoke up and started sharing the gospel. It wasn't me. It was one of the other students. And it was just so cool to have seen that person mature and develop and grow and walk in the path. There's nothing more exciting as a pastor for me when I see the fruit of others' people growth and walk with Christ. And so when we talk about knowing the right path for our own lives, one of the things I also want to emphasize this morning is, as my job here involved in children and sort of student ministry, I'm really focused. I love all you guys. I'm really focused on the kids between 0 and 18, all right? And I love all of them. And I think sometimes you guys forget how much time I spend with some of them, too. Like, I like you guys, but I see your kids a whole lot more than even you. And so I love spending time with them. But I desperately want to see everyone on the right path. And I know from 0 to 18, those years are so important to make sure that kids are learning the Word. And that's why we do all the things we do. That's why we do VBS. That's why we do student ministry. That's why we have child evangelism fellowship curriculum in the preschool room. And so that way when they're 3 and 4 years old, they're understanding what Jesus has done for them. That's why down in the K through 5th right now, it's children desiring God and they're learning all the attributes of God. We want to get them into this Word as much as we can. That's why in student ministry, we've been going through Jonah and just spending time in the Word so we can gain knowledge and wisdom and making sure kids are walking the right path. And so one of the wonderful opportunities that maybe someone here this morning has is to be a part of that process, all right? Just when I look at my own life, my parents had a great influence in my life. A pastor maybe had a great influence in my life. But there were so many other people, all right? People like you who invested into my life when I was growing up. It was that person teaching Sunday school class. It was that person who was volunteering with student ministry. It was the person who chaperoned a trip to a concert, I remember. And just sort of meeting him and engaging with him and seeing, hey, here's a guy who's in his 20s, he's got a strong faith. It was so amazing and wonderful, and so many people along the path. And so even when I was in first through third grade, I had these amazing Sunday school teachers who taught me the Old Testament. And I'll tell you what, man, I can't wait to be able to see them and be like, thank you. Like, thank you for taking the time and investing. So everyone here who's involved in those ministries, thank you. Like, thank you for helping point kids on the right path. I also want to challenge you, hey, like, if that's something that maybe you would be interested in, talk to me. Like, you have, all of us have an opportunity to be a part in the next generation finding the right path. And so, whether it's in the nursery, in our preschool room, in our first or K through fifth student ministry, I want you to take 3, 4, 5 minutes at minimum and think, hey, is that something I could be involved in? Like, I could be involved in shaping the lives of the future. You know, guys, we spend so much time on junk that we have no control over, all right? And I hesitate using the word junk now because this is important to some people, and it's important to me too. But, you know, the presidential election coming up, right? We spend time on the news and reading stories and following this and following that. But you know what? And sometimes we get angry and we get frustrated. We get impatient and all those things. But as we're reading all this stuff, the reality is no one in here, we're not going to change who's president. You know, like not a single person in here can really do anything about that unless you got a couple $1 billion. Then maybe you might have a voice that other people will listen to. But for the most part, we have no control. We spend so much time thinking about that, and we have no control. We spend so much time thinking about the culture wars and this going on in our society and just all this stuff. Well, you know what? Just take some time and invest in one person's life. Those are the things you can actually make a difference in someone's life, but those are the things we don't do. Oftentimes, the very things we have control over that we can change and affect, we don't spend time on, but we spend time on things we can't control. And so one of those is making sure kids age 0 to 18 are getting on the right path here at Crossroads. And the reality is all of us are a part of that. And so if you're not involved in those ministries, maybe God doesn't want you to be involved in those ministries, right? But maybe for some of you, he does. You never really even thought about it. So I want to challenge you today in that, to think through, is that somewhere that God would have me serve? And there's a lot of different opportunities. There's a lot of different gifts. There's a lot of different skills. If you say, Jeff, I ain't got those skills, we'll tell you what, we'll put you to youth some way, right? And so, but not only that, then, just as what we've been talking about this morning, just taking an evaluation of what path you're on, all right? If there's some crookedness in our life, we need to confess that to the Lord, and then we need to get into the Word and get on God's path. And so let's go and pray. Father God, we just want to thank you for today. God, we want to thank you for your Word and the fact that you have given us knowledge and understanding and wisdom and everything we need to walk the path you have for us, God. For those of us here who at times who have gotten off the path you want for us, and we've got caught up in sin or rebellion or really stupid decisions, God, we just want to confess that to you. If we're on a path right now that we, quite frankly, don't know how to get off of, we just ask for your help and your grace and your mercy helping us get off that path and leading us to your Word and your truth and spending time with you, Lord. But then also, God, not only our own paths, but the paths of others, God, we have an opportunity to influence the lives of people around us. And so, God, just open our eyes to that, the opportunities we have to make a difference in someone else's life. And God, that we would lead, not only that we would ourselves would get on the path, but we'd lead other people to the path as well. We just pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.